Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
How's it going, everybody? This is Tyler Dunn sitting here with Bob McGinn for another Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, JSOnline.com, Packers podcast. How are we doing today, Bob?
Good, now that we just heard Stevie Wonder. Little Stevie Wonder.
Little Stevie. So what's the difference between Little Stevie and Big Stevie?
Well, he signed that contract, I believe, at like age 10 with Motown.
Age 10.
Sang background stuff at age 10 out of Saginaw, Michigan.
Jeff Janis country.
Lefty Frizzell also wrote about Saginaw, Michigan.
Is that right?
In Saginaw, Michigan, yep.
Oh. And you know, this is how dated I am. I'm sure I'll get crucified for this.
Nobody's alive to remember that, Tyler.
Well, I think the Red Hot Chili Peppers remade that song.
Really?
And that's kind of what I was thinking of. I didn't even know Stevie Wonder originally did it. So,
They might
shut this podcast off now just on that fact alone. So I apologize to everybody out there.
You gotta like it.
I like it. It's
funk,
good,
man. Funk,
good.
Soul, yeah.
I like it when you go funk over, you know, put me to sleep country music on your choices. I like that. That was good stuff.
Okay, good.
Were you a big Motown guy growing up?
Big, yeah, huge. That's still my number one genre. Would that be?
Yeah.
Genre of music. Okay. Number one. Yeah.
Good stuff. All right, well, we'll talk about Carolina today, look back at that game a little bit, get into the Packers secondary, why it's so improved in 2014, talk a little bit about Rob Ryan versus Aaron Rodgers and the whole blitzing dynamic there. Rodgers has historically been the best against the blitz in the NFL. We'll look at the Saints lineup. Bob's going to take us down memory lane, look back at a few of those games inside the dome. Some Forrest Gregg classics that he had. Yes, he's got his old newspapers out right now, folks, right here in the kitchen. From what years?
We're going to go back to 86, 93, and 84.
86.
Three trips down there to the Big Easy, yep.
Ah, very nice. Okay, so we'll talk about that. Maybe it'll touch on Morgan Burnett, his brother Cat Burnett. If you caught that story in the Journal Sentinel this week, Cat Burnett, his brother, suffered 6 concussions at Georgia when he played and kind of paid it forward to Morgan when the game was taken away from him. And then we got a lot of questions in the queue, Bob.
Oh, I can't
wait. A lot of questions.
Cannot wait for those.
I know you can't.
Yep.
First of all, how's life? Anything we need to catch up on in the world of Bob McGinn these days?
We got a bye coming, Tyler.
What are you doing on this bye week?
Going up to the UP.
Why not?
Yeah. Where else do you go?
Well, what's up there?
High school playoff football. I'm going to go to a game somewhere, I hope, on a field that I once played at.
Is that right?
Go with some buddies. That's the plan.
So that field still exists?
Fields all over the place. All over the UP.
I would have figured there's trees and animals and wilderness on that field at this point.
A lot of declining enrollment. A lot of 8-man football up there.
Is that right?
Really, yeah.
8-man. Really, well, I was just talking to somebody this past weekend. We're out at the Lorelei Inn. Got to give them a shout out. Great bar here in Green Bay. Check it out, folks.
Hmm.
And he has family or a friend, somebody close to him lives in the UP, and he was telling me just how bad, you know, business, commerce, the economy in general was up there. Just not a lot of businesses. People are leaving the area, and there's not a lot of jobs. I mean, do you see that yourself as a former Uper?
When Pat and I graduated from high school, 45 years ago about, population of the UP, I think it's 17 counties. I should know that. Maybe it's 15. Was right around 307,000. Okay. Huh. Right now, I believe the UP population is between 285 and 290. Is there another place on earth that has lost population over 45 years? It's the last frontier. And, you know, a lot of, you know, like there was a truck crane company in Escanaba that employed 1,000 people. And that closed, Harnischwiger, and that closed in the, right around 1980, I'll say. These jobs have never come back. A lot of mining has gone away. It's an extremely depressed area.
Wow.
But to me, that's the attractiveness of it. And proud as heck to be from there and just love the place. Yep. And, man, you want to get away, it is great.
Yeah, it just kind of blows my mind when there's such a beautiful area, beautiful land, that there wouldn't be people there living full-time one way or another. But
the development, Tyler, from Michigan, you know, it moved up the lower peninsula all the way, well, within 40 miles of the Mackinac Bridge. And so Traverse City has just exploded over on that western side of Lake Michigan. Petoskey, Charlevoix, all that is like a money gentried area. But, boy, you cross the bridge and you're in the UP. There's a few condominiums in, like, Brevoort and a little bit in Manistique, but there is just – there's just no development. I mean, it's timber, it's hunting, and it's fishing, and it's isolation, and I love it.
You know what, though? I mean, you're close enough to Canada. I just say, hey, somebody just drop a Tim Hortons coffee right in the middle there, and you'll just see the people flock. They'll be moving around the Tim Hortons. I'm telling you, if somebody wants to just live in Green Bay, Wisconsin, just bring a Tim Hortons here, and you will be set for life.
You love Timmy, don't you?
There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it.
I like it.
Yeah, a Buffalo Sabre, not just the Toronto Maple Leaf.
We made a late night run in Detroit after a Ford Field game to Timmy, right? There's some of that over in Lawrence.
Yeah, we were driving around, what was it, 11:30? No, it was 12 o'clock after midnight.
Well,
had to
Eastern,
be.
Yeah.
And we could not find anywhere with any food by our hotel, but Tim Hortons came through, baby.
Always.
Like they always do.
Yep.
Okay, let's talk a little Green Bay 38-17 win over Carolina. Been in the paper, been online. I think a lot of fans have moved on, but we got to look back. So what was the takeaway for you? You wrote about that NASCAR package after the game. First of all, do you like the name? Are you a NASCAR fan?
No. No.
Me?
Are you?
Nah.
No, I can't. I went to one nationwide race at Elkhart Lake, my wife and I, about 4 years ago. Really enjoyed it. It's the biggest race I've ever been to, but no, I don't follow it.
You know, I covered the Pocono, whatever it is, when I was at the Philadelphia Daily News as an intern.
Really?
And it was, I tell you, I can see why people love it. I mean, it's a big party. It's a big tailgate. Mm-hmm. It's a license to drink. And then you, as a fan, and then you go to this thing, and it is pretty intense. I mean, Joey Logano and was it Kevin Harvick? They got into it that race. I mean, and he went right up to his car after the game, screaming in his face. I mean, the kind of stuff that I wish we got in the NFL. Can you imagine that? You know, Aaron Rodgers just going up to Drew Brees, right in his face, screaming profanity. So that's kind of neat, but, not a big fan.
I drag my wife and kids and grandchildren out. We did it again this year, once a summer. We go to some dirt track, whether it's the Seymour Tri-Oval. This year we went to Shawano on Saturday night.
The Shawano, okay.
Shawano Speedway. You know, you pay your $10. Beer is about, I don't know, $1.50, $2. And it's a huge crowd. It's a great scene.
Nice.
Little kids love it. I love it. Pat's not too fond of it, but she hung in there.
She's a trooper.
I prefer the Seymour Tri-Oval.
The Seymour Tri-Oval.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, maybe Dom Capers just could have called it that, the Seymour Tri-Oval package. That would have been. Then he would have been. Who would be included in that package? You bring back maybe Zombo. You bring back Desmond Moses.
And, yeah, there you go. Eric Walden's got it coming.
Dick Soto.
Yeah.
Part of the Seymour.
And Aaron Campman.
And Aaron Campman.
He had 8 games.
Throw him in that package. Sure. Now, all right, so here's, I guess, I want to get your take first and foremost, but real quick. So everybody's talking about this NASCAR package. It's great. You bring Matthews, Perry, Neil, Peppers, all on your front at once, schematically, X's and O's wise. It, you know, it seems like a stroke of genius, but doesn't it just kind of come down to personnel? That they just have better players who can win a one-on-one situation that they didn't have in the past?
Those are four pretty good athletes, obviously.
Yeah.
Matthews and Neil, they're buddies, and they run these stunts together, and it's very effective on one side, and they do a lot of that. I think Matthews had 11 stunts in that game, generally working from outside to inside, and Neil then going inside to outside. Good, and Matthews is unselfish. Perry's playing pretty decent in a reduced role, and Peppers has been fine. So you got four rushers. Now, I don't, you know, people are going to try to run the ball against that. Because it's lighter people, but
do you just use it in obvious passing situations?
It's been in dime, right? Third and seven and more, maybe. Yeah.
Well, it does make a lot of sense because those are your investments. I mean, they gave Clay Matthews that $66 million extension. They signed a future potential Hall of Famer in Julius Peppers. Mike Neal's a second round pick who they gave a contract extension to. Nick Perry's a first round pick. Tremont Williams talked in the offseason, a lot of these players talked in the offseason about quote-unquote unleashing the playmakers. This would be that, then. This is a way to take advantage of your playmakers.
Yeah. We saw it against Carolina. They got after him pretty good. Cam Newton only went down three times, but, you know, Tremont Williams thought it would have been an 8-sack game. I don't know about that, but probably 6 against Derek Anderson had he been out there for 60 minutes. So we'll see. The Saints have a good line. You know, it'll be a battle down there.
4-3. Is that dead and gone? Quad?
Yeah, the old quad. Haven't seen much of it after 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, when they need to stop the run, they're playing that base 3-4. I think it is probably gone for a while.
Yeah. So, I mean, they had all the communication problems with it. You know, 12 guys on the field, one play, maybe 10 another play. Seattle did whatever they wanted to offensively. I mean, was the quad failure a product of something new that they just really didn't practice a lot during the summer? I mean,
Tyler, I just don't know.
What would bring that back?
I haven't thought it through, and I don't want to just talk to talk. I just don't really know on that issue.
Just shoot from the hip, Bob.
You got any thoughts on that issue?
I don't have a lot of thoughts on that issue.
Yeah, I just don't.
You know, you wrote about it after the Dolphins game. I mean, they turn back to their 3-4 at a critical moment. They get off the field. I mean, that kind of moment is really going to resonate. They're going to remember that. I just think you do what you do best. And, yeah, it's going to be tough for them to kind of turn back to what they thought was going to take everybody by surprise. At the end of the day, though, last year, this was the conversation, right, that all the fans – seems to have on the outside, is it scheme, is it Dom Capers, or is it personnel? And we all know the injuries they had, but they ended up fielding against San Francisco by the time the postseason came around. Isn't it personnel? I mean, they just have better players. I mean, MD Jennings and Jerron McMillan, they played 2,223 snaps the last two seasons. Hmm. Neither one of them can find a job. We'll get into the secondary later, but and they have better players.
It kind of comes down to that, Tyler. Yeah. I mean, the coaching in the league is very good. You know, it's pretty much everywhere. Capers does a job. Does a good job. A lot of people do good jobs. You got assistant coaches. Coaching's pretty steady, you know. I know there's some exceptions, some exceptional people, but by and large, these coaches do the job and the schemes. They're kind of sound, but you're right. It's the people. People win the game.
Yeah, right. You still have to know when to blitz, when not to blitz, when to turn to a 3-4 in that kind of moment. The players win. And, I mean, gosh, look at the Saints right now. I mean, their defense, their pass defense was ranked number 2 last year. They completely botched the cornerback position in the offseason, and now they're struggling. So, okay. All right. Any other takeaways from the Carolina game?
They threw the ball at will. Did you see Charles Godfrey, the nickelback, just got waved?
Yeah. Let go. I mean, that was – and we've seen this – I think we've seen this out of Aaron Rodgers and the Packers offense a lot where they –
they almost like put a big bullseye on a guy and just go after him. What was it? Christmas Day 2011, his MVP season against the Bears. I'm trying to think which cornerback it was. Zachary Bowman. Huh? And he just went after Bowman all game. And he kind of did the same here with Godfrey. You know, you could see Carolina's approach on Randall Cobb. I think he was playing 10 to 12 yards off of him. And as Cobb said after the game, if you get that free access, you better take advantage of it. They got the quick passes to him. He was able to break some tackles. And as he said, it looked like his burst was back, his pre-injury burst.
So did you write where somebody said that the best they had seen Cobb ever played was by Leon Hall of the Bengals?
Right.
You said that. Was that your story?
Yeah, that was my story. It was Casey Hayward.
Okay.
Yeah, talking to Casey Hayward after the game. And
I thought Hall was incredible that game.
Right, right.
And I went and talked to Cobb a couple days later, I think it was, if he had ever played a guy better than that, and he poo-pooed it.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, Hayward said that, I asked him, you know, how would you defend Cobb? And he said, you have to mix it up. You have to use some press. You have to play off. You just have to keep him off balance, because if you don't, then they'll take advantage of it. And Godfrey was off of him most of the game. And then I didn't bring up Leon Hall or anything. He just mentioned Leon Hall. That was a guy who did bluster him to an extent.
Yeah.
I mean, he was really physical.
Very.
He was in his face.
Yep.
That game. But it has to be encouraging for Green Bay that Randall Cobb is performing the way he's performing right now. And he does. Yeah, he's been scoring all of these touchdowns. 7 of the 8 are inside the 10. But we're starting to see the game breaker that we saw in 2012 coming on.
It was the best game he's played this year. Well, he broke those three tackles on the sideline. That was really something. The feint against Kuechly on the broken route, the scramble route, and then the 47-yard gain after that, was really something. Those two plays were what he hadn't shown this summer. He hadn't shown the first month. We wrote about that in August. It just wasn't happening. But it is now. And now this is what the Packers want to see before they give him the big money.
Definitely, definitely. Cornerbacks even mentioned that. You know, ask when did you kind of see Randall Cobb really snap out of it? I think it was Hayward who said toward the end of camp. You know, it wasn't really himself most of camp. And, I mean, you can see that was a really serious injury that he had. It can take a while to maybe get the confidence back in your leg and to cut and do what you want. So, looks like he'll be a go-to guy if teams are really going to be shading extra attention toward Jordy Nelson, which you have to expect. Okay, let's move on. Packers secondary, you wrote about this in your column Sunday, not giving up a lot of big plays. I mean, they're getting the turnovers. I believe they have, as a defense, 10 interceptions by 8 different players. But the secondary, and Darren Perry, Dom Capers, they talked about this more than anything else after last season, is it wasn't so much the turnovers that bothered him, it was giving up too many big plays. They haven't done that this year, Bob, as
right.
You wrote.
They've given up one play of 35 yards or more. That was the bomb in Detroit, Corey Fuller at the end of the half, I think, against Sam Shields.
Right.
Last year at this point, they had given up 6. The average under Capers in his first 5 years was 4.2. This is what Capers, Joe Witt, the cornerback coach, Darren Perry, the safety coach, they all stress this big time. And it stems from better rush, but it stems from people in the secondary, as you mentioned. I mean, the difference between Clinton Dix and McMillan / Jennings is night and day. Better people, better coordination, really good coaching, and they've done the job against big plays. And that's a critical part of defense.
Now they've played Geno Smith, Christian Ponder, who else comes to mind? Well, Tannehill, I guess, isn't really that bad after
terrible
all.
Deep ball thrower.
Right, you can't go deep. So, I mean, they're about to face Drew Brees. They're about to face Tom Brady, Matt Ryan, some really good quarterbacks who can push the ball downfield. They did face Cutler. They'll see him again. They did face Stafford. They'll see him again. So, I mean, and somebody asked me this in the chat. I thought it was a good question. I mean, how much of this is a mirage? How much of it is real? I guess we're going to find out here pretty soon.
Yeah, I mean, they'll be giving up some plays. It's just the way of the NFL, you know.
Mm-hmm.
People will complete some balls, and the Saints, how many yards did they throw for? 7 touchdowns down there, I think it was, in 08, the last time the Packers were there. 51 points, anyway.
Yeah.
That was the most Green Bay had given up in, like, 22 years or something, I believe.
Well, and even in Green Bay's 2 wins at Lambeau Field against New Orleans, Breeze went wild.
Yeah.
He had 2 huge days.
So, you're right. There's tough opponents coming. Green Bay's pretty much injury-free on defense. You know, Shields missed a game, but I think he'll be back soon. They just got great depth at corner. They got great depth at safety. They got a NASCAR rush right now. They're healthy. Dayton Jones will be back before long. Their defense looks good. Things can change in a hurry, though, in this business.
They can. But, yeah, it does sound like these guys are pretty confident right now. I mean, you can really sense it in the locker room, especially in that secondary. There's a lot of confidence that maybe you didn't see last year at critical moments. So anything else stand out with the secondary? Is there a player that's kind of exceeded your expectations that has surprised you? Or is it more of a collective kind of effort?
I think Clinton Dix is playing a lot better than he did this summer in September.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a rough game in Seattle. He didn't react well on 2 33-yard passes. I mean, it was pretty brutal. All summer long, we watched him a lot. You watch a first-round pick, right? He was hesitant.
Yeah.
He was passive. He was conservative. And I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, of course. These are just practices. But I think, you know, he was just learning, right, and feeling his way because he's a different player now. Now he's going after things. He's kind of a passive-aggressive, which is good, passive-discipline, aggressive discipline, I guess. And, yeah, he's playing good football now.
Well, it's safe to say day one of training camp, Micah Hyde knew this defense a heck of a lot better than Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. And he was the starter. He started the regular season as starter, obviously, but there just seemed to be a lot more confidence that he was going to be in the right spot than a rookie coming in. Yeah, I know Clinton Dix says the defense is exactly the same or close to it, and his defensive coordinator actually worked with Dom Capers, so that helped kind of bridge some gaps. But Hyde was the experienced one. You could see that in camp. You're right. There was a practice, midway to late of camp when he kind of had a couple interceptions on tip balls. Maybe that kind of helped his confidence. And at Seattle, he missed some tackles, but he made some plays. You're starting to see those misses go down. And that's kind of what stands out to me most with Clinton Dix is if somebody catches a pass, if there's somebody in his vicinity, they're down right then. I mean, there's not 1 yard after contact with him. And it's just got to give them a lot of flexibility as a defense to use Burnett in different ways, too, and probably a big reason they're not giving up big plays.
I cited this play in Miami in the column Sunday. Lamar Miller, he ran 4.36 coming out of the U, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he just hit that thing right up the middle, and that's the classic case. Now you got a free safety and a running back one-on-one. You got no angle. It's straight ahead. You don't have the benefit of the sideline. The guy's got a two-way goal. It separates the men from the boys. And Miller's coming through, and he's juking and shifting and doing all this. And he just, like Clinton Dix, kept his eyes right maybe on his belt buckle, and he would not go for anything. And he cut him down, didn't he?
Yeah.
What a tackle after a gain of 14. It could have been, I think it was a 55-yard touchdown. But what percent of the time, I asked, Darren Perry, he played safety for 10 years or so for the Steelers and the Saints, I believe, finished. He said that's missed a lot, and that's demoralizing for a defense. And he just cut him down like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
Right?
That was a great reference there. I mean, Lamar Miller, I mean, with that kind of speed, all right, when he's coming after safeties they've had here in the past, I mean, gosh, maybe it's not fair to keep picking on an undrafted guy out of Arkansas State and an overdrafted safety out of Maine. It's not their fault. They were forced to play out there, but what happens in that scenario?
Okay, let's just look at it. So McMillan, I'll give him a 70% chance of making that tackle. What do you say?
Trying to think back to that play.
It was a classic, Tyler.
I think it's
50-50. 50-50.
Yeah. He could hit. Tackling was another issue that he had to kind of work through.
All right, let's go to MD. This is a back who was really untouched. escaping straight between the hash marks up the gut. All right, so MD, you call first. What chance does he get down on Lamar Miller?
I'll give him slightly better than McMillan.
Yeah?
I think that maybe he tackles him and falls downfield a little bit, but, yeah, maybe a little better than McMillan, 60%. His tackling did improve a little bit. His second season. He got a little bigger. And we're not talking about a DeMarco Murray or a hefty running back here where those guys might have given him a little more trouble.
I'll say that most of the time, MD kind of wings the guy, knocks him a little bit off balance, mm-hmm. and then the posse comes and gets him after a gain of 22 rather than 14. We'll go 8 more.
Okay.
After contact.
8 more. Yeah. All right. Carries him a little downfield. Right. Then the posse comes.
They're both unemployed, those safeties, right?
Oh, yeah. I believe. Last I checked.
I think so.
Yeah. Last I checked. They've had some workouts. They've bounced around, but they do not have jobs. So
both good guys.
Great.
Enjoyed them both, eh? Yeah.
Definitely worth noting that.
Yep.
Always available.
Yep.
Jerron McMillan, I mean, kind of a tough-talking guy. You had to like that about him.
Really like the guy, yep.
Okay, let's move on to the New Orleans Saints then. They're 2-4.
Yep.
They're going to be desperate. They're going to be going for broke. They need a win in the worst way right now. Although, as Aaron Rodgers pointed out yesterday, they're only a game out of first place, too, in their division. But in the grand scheme of things in the NFC, dropping to 2-5 would really be difficult to come out of. So down in the Superdome.
Well, not really. Oh, go ahead.
No.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, that NFC South is pretty bad. So even if they go to 2-5, they can still win the division. Carolina's 3-3-1. They're not going anywhere with that deep.
God, so what's going to win the division? What's going to win the NFC South?
It would be
South?
8-8, 9-7, huh?
Yeah.
The Bucks, I can't see them. Atlanta's dead. The Bucks, are they alive? It's a horrible division, isn't it?
It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
So the Yanks aren't anywhere being counted out, even if they drop this one Sunday night.
Okay. So, all right, your most memorable trips to New Orleans.
Well, the first one was in 84. That's Forrest Gregg's first season. And Forrest went down there with a 2-7 mark. And the Saints were finally starting to get good under Jim Mora. And the Pack won that one, 23-13. And the lead was when nobody believed in the Green Bay Packers, they did. And now it's paying off. $57,000 at this Louisiana Superdome. And the Packers have been, Packers have been more consistent in 10 games than they probably were in the past 10 years. But why? Quote, fear of Forrest Gregg, guard Tim Huffman offered after a moment's hesitation. Forrest got after people, and they really did it. Linebacker John Anderson, the great one from Waukesha, would have made several Pro Bowls had he been with a different team and had he not broken his arm two or three times. John said, "We're on a roll, and we think we can beat anybody." Larry McCarron, in his final year as center, Larry said, "We're 3-7, and we're headed up."
So this bumped him up to 3-7.
It was a big victory.
A lot of good vibes for 3-7.
Very big. That season, Ty, they won 7 of their last 8 after a 1-7 start to finish 8-8, just out of the money. But there was optimism in Green Bay after Forrest's first season. All right? Now, Tyler.
Let me ask you this.
Yes, sir.
How did they fail to stack their successes? This seems like a success worth stacking here.
Well, they came back the next year with the same deck. Lynn Dickey throwing the ball to Paul Kaufman, James Lofton, Larry McCarron retired with that nerve condition in his neck. They plugged in there. And they had another explosive team. Bob Schnelker was the wonderful offensive coordinator, and they went 8-8 again.
So they
missed the playoffs.
They scattered their successes. You can't scatter them.
Unfortunately, they had the Chicago Bears in their division, and that was too much to overcome. So then the next year, Forrest got tired of 2 8-8s, back-to-back 8-8, so he shuffled the deck. And he came back with about the youngest team in Packer history, and he cut everybody, Dickey, Kaufman, Greg Cook. He ran them all off. He had a better idea. And so then Forrest went down to New Orleans in 86 with that club. And in week two, he went down to the Dome, and he dropped it 24-10. His starting quarterback, Randy Wright, he threw five picks that day.
A Baker's five picks.
And then he was replaced by Vinny Ferragamo, the ex-Ram, who had been in the Super Bowl. And Vinny threw the ball 15 times, giving the Pack 59 attempts. And Vinny was picked off twice, so that was seven picks that day.
How do you? And they only lost 24-10.
Well, Bobby Hebert was behind the at the controls for the Saints, and the Saints only had 259 yards against a gritty defense, but seven picks were too much to overcome. Okay,
I would think so. All right, give us the scene after the game there.
The lead was get out the life jackets. The Green Bay Packers, adrift without a quarterback to steer their rudderless ship, are taking on water fast. They've been beaten horribly by two chronic losers. The worst start for the Packs since 76. So there was only 46,000 at the Dome that day. They didn't believe in the Pack. And so afterwards, and I think I've mentioned this maybe a year or two ago, but now I got some of the quotes. The visiting locker room was right in that tunnel behind one goalpost. And then the coach would come out of the locker room and conduct his post-game presser outside the door. And this was 10 minutes after the game, so most of the fans had vacated that dome. But there were, along each side of that, of the stands along that the tunnel, was a railing, and fans were hanging over that railing looking to either harass Forrest or get a view or maybe an autograph of their favorite Packers, visiting players. And while we're sitting out there waiting for Forrest to come out to describe this seven-pick fiasco, some of the fans, they kept screaming over and over again, "You bunch of bums, you stink!" And then this one guy, several players heard the chubby man, and they glared at him. Tackle Greg Fiesel yelled at him, "Go on a diet." So then Forrest, they also yelled at us, "Are you guys the Green Bay Press? You guys stink too, you bums. You guys stink just like your team. This will probably be the only game we'll win this year. You know how long it will take to deodorize a building this big?" And then Forrest came out and his lips were twitching, you know, and he was just burned, and they were yelling at him, too. It was quite a scene, Tyler.
So that's like Twitter in 1986 or 1987, pretty much, right?
All right, so then Ron Wolf, who we could discuss on the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And he came in 92, and it all changed, late 91. So then Wolf's first trip to New Orleans.
Wow, look at that mugshot, Bob McGinn.
November of 93, so at that point I was the Milwaukee Journal before the merger.
Okay.
We were a PM newspaper. I remember this. I worked about, it was the way it was every Sunday. One guy covering the game. Okay. One, not three, Ty, one. Long game story, notes, column, notes inside. You know, you did it all till 4:30 in the morning.
Wow.
All right, so on this one, the Pack won it 19-17, and it was a miracle finish. Favre hit Sterling Sharp for 54 yards, as improbable a desperation play as the Packers have pulled off in several years. And Chris Jackie hit a 36-yarder with 3 seconds left to beat those Saints 19-17. All right? Wolf said, "The worm turned. It shows the grit and determination of our team. They played their hearts out." Reggie White's walking off the field that day, and he's just screaming. He said, "That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about." And it was a big victory. The Packers were 5-4. They went on to win the division in 93, or at least made the playoffs. First playoff appearance in a full season since 72? Yeah.
Unbelievable.
They made it in the strike year of 82. Matt Brock, the defensive end, said, "Reggie's the most vocal leader we have. People look at him as the old guy who's been through some big, big games." So that was a shining moment. So we've done
the photo you have there on the cover of the papers, Reggie White just plastering the quarterback that the Saints had then.
He played against Willie Rolfe, a Hall of Fame tackle that day. Mm-hmm. Reggie had 2 sacks, at least 3 other knockdowns, several other pressures, 6 solo tackles, 2 assists, and a fumble recovery. He was bringing the heat. Big Dog was bringing the heat, said D-line coach Greg Blasch. All right. So
that was when things really turned around. I mean, yeah. So these games down in New Orleans inside the Superdome really do kind of epitomize the turn of the Green Bay Packers just as a franchise overall. I mean, just complete, utter embarrassment down there. A coach and fans just yelling at each other to kind of a miraculous win that really started the 90s dynasty that they had there in the NFC.
The Aaron Rodgers era, you know, they got ripped 51-29 down there. I mean, it was a pathetic operation in 08. That was their last trip. So now these same fans will see Aaron Rodgers 6 years later, huh? We'll see how it goes.
Asking Tremont Williams about that on Monday, what he remembered from that game.
Yeah.
He said, you know, we took a whooping. And they heard Drew Brees during the week. Maybe you remember this. I wasn't covering the team then. He said that the players heard Drew Brees talking about facing Green Bay and that they expected man coverage and that they expected to kind of do what they wanted to do offensively. And my God, did he ever. Which, that 2008 season, so Green Bay's coming off, what, a 37-3 win against Chicago. Things are looking a lot better first year post-Brett Favre. And then they just lost. They get wiped out that game, but they lost a lot of close games, too, and things kind of unraveled for Green Bay.
They lost four more close ones in a row, nothing by more than 4 points, I believe, and finished 6-10. Yeah. In that game, the Saints, I think they had five starters missing. Reggie Bush hardly played. Three of their top four cornerbacks did not play, and they still just destroyed them. Seven touchdowns.
Green Bay won the next two games against the Saints at home, that thrilling opener in 2011. 2012, kind of a desperation bowl of sorts early in the season. Both teams didn't have great records, and Rodgers and Brees just had this great duel of a game. Packers come out on top. So Rodgers has won the last two games against Brees.
So let's look at the Saints at home before we look at the Saints people, right? So, Tyler, Sean Payton is suspended for all of 2012. That doesn't count. He's 19-0 in his last 19 home games, counting playoffs, one playoff game. And against the spread, he's 17-1-1. Are you kidding me?
How does home field advantage is what it is, but how does a coach become so dominant at home like that when there's that year in between when they are the opposite? Why is that?
They built their team for that dome. It's a fast track. They built that team. You know, it's been an offensive bunch, speed. Their whole team is Brees. So Payton has played to that, and he's an imaginative, great offensive coach.
Friendly in his press conferences, as we saw this week, just a friendly, amicable guy.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. And he and their fans. I mean, I often said the loudest stadium I've ever seen was that Viking Saint playoff game in 09. That place now is unbelievable.
I remember you talking about that.
It's incredible. It truly is.
Louder than Seattle?
I think so. I've never quite seen anything like that playoff game. From the second that game started, they were on their feet. It's like the din never stopped other than halftime.
That's unbelievable.
Just constant.
Yeah.
When the other team had the ball. I played so great that first half. Against those odds and all that bounty hunting and the ripping and the shots he was taking, it was an amazing performance.
Now, that game was really kind of a throwback to, like, you know, 1994, 95, when these great quarterbacks were just getting knocked around, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Wasn't it something?
Yeah.
Favre just sent sprawling play after play, getting up, firing passes. I mean, he blew it at the end, obviously, and so did Brad Childress on the penalty. But all right, so they're 19. Now, this year they've not played well at home. They barely beat the Vikings. Castle got knocked out. They won the game 20-9. They were a 10-point favorite, so they beat the spread by one. And a couple weeks ago against the Bucks, they go into overtime. The Bucks blew a late 11-point lead, blew the thing. There was a safety in there. And the Saints win in OT by six. They were an 11-point favorite. So they lost against the spread.
Right.
That's his only loss against the spread since the 2010 finale.
So is the Superdome losing a little bit of its aura? I mean, when the Tampa Bay Buccaneers waltz in there with what they have and almost knock you off, really should knock them off.
Maybe it is, huh? Maybe it is. But now they're desperate, aren't they?
They are, and they're going to...
It's a Sunday night, prime timer, they'll be all jacked, so Green Bay's going to get the best shot, no doubt.
That's why I just cannot see defensive coordinator Rob Ryan holding back in this one. I mean, 2-4, you live and die by the blitz. They really did not try to blitz Matthew Stafford last week that much. I'd like to get your take on this, too, but just writing that for the paper today, Rob Ryan versus Aaron Rodgers, isn't he going to try to beat him at his own game? Does a defensive coordinator really change his stripes in a game like this?
I don't think so, Tyler. He played by far his team's best defensive game this year against Detroit when he didn't blitz on the road. I just think he's going to sit there and, you know, try to keep the Packers around 35 and try to hope Peyton and Breeze get 38 or 40 or something like that. I just don't see it. I don't think you can blitz Rodgers. And I think, you know, Rob found that out as you described well in this Cleveland game in 09. I just don't see it.
He has blitzed 46% of the time this season, which, you know, you had in your scouting report. It's seventh highest in the league.
Wasn't it 34%? Yeah, 34.8, I think it was.
Oh, I'm sorry. Right. I'm looking at that Cleveland game. In the Cleveland game, he blitzed Rodgers 46% of the time.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers posted his best passer rating of his career that day, 155.4. They didn't throw a lot. He was 15 of 20, but when they did, I mean, there's that 71-yard touchdown to Donald Driver where they send Bowens off of the slot. He kind of crept out over Driver. He goes. The safety behind him, Abraham Elam, he blitzes from about 10 to 12 yards back, and maybe that middle linebacker, he should have kind of came out and at least covered a slant, covered Driver to some extent. He didn't do that, and it was peace out. So maybe you're right. Maybe they do sit back. It's just hard to imagine that. I don't know. A defensive coordinator at 2-4, holding back at all in
he
this
doesn't.
Kind of environment. And if he does blitz a lot, boy, Aaron Rodgers, he might have a field day. So I can see your point. Let's look at Aaron Rodgers' numbers right now versus the blitz. This is according to stats. Okay, so since his career began in 2005, his passer rating is the best in the NFL against the blitz, 109.6. He's completed 64% of his passes for 7,745 yards, 67 touchdowns, and only 18 picks. 8.9 yards per attempt against the blitz is also number one, ahead of Manning, ahead of Breeze, all those guys. I asked Matt Flynn, isn't he licking his chops right about now? And Flynn said, quote, I don't know if he licks his chops or anything, but he's good at reading pre-snap coverages. We're all receivers, tight ends, everybody good at looking at hot routes and understanding what they're trying to do defensively, where the holes are. So there's one thing Aaron Rodgers is better than any other quarterback, it's attacking the blitz. And Rob Ryan, both Ryan boys, they love to mix it up. They love to stay creative, give you exotic looks, and the blitz is a big part of that. You say he might just sit back.
I think Sean Payton will intervene there and insist that Rob take it easy and we'll try to outscore him. That's what he'll say.
It should be interesting. Definitely the game within the game. So keep an eye on that, folks. You got the lineup in front of you.
Let's break it down. Let's run through it. Okay, their offense, you know, they don't have the weapons they used to have. Jimmy Graham with the shoulder, I mean, he just stood around in Detroit. He's got a bad wing. No idea what he can do this week. He'll try to do more. I mean, he's a great red zone threat, but if he can't take a hit, he can't block, he's just a decoy. Good backup tight ends, Ben Watson and Josh Hill. They're both pretty darn good players. Outside, you got Marcus Colson. He's going to be in the slot the whole game, in tight. He likes these condensed formations. And he's going to try to get behind the linebackers in front of the safeties. He's killed the Packers many times in his career. He's had a bunch of concussions, but he can really go and get the high ball. Brandon Cooks, the fast little rookie. Not much impact so far. Kenny Stills, the son of the former Packer safety that you had a great story on recently. Kenny's 6'1½", 195. He can run like the wind. He and Cooks have this great, you know, sub-4.4 speed. He's a deep threat. He ran right by Darius Slay for a 46-yard touchdown in Detroit. I mean, it was impressive. Breeze hit him with a bomb, long bomb. He beat Slay. And Slay's a heck of a player. So this guy's a threat. Both Tremont Williams and all these cornerbacks have to be wary of him going deep. But he can be knocked off routes. He's not a real strong guy. Robert Meacham's over the hill, so that's the receiving core. The running backs, Pierre Thomas, a great screen guy, and I love Pierre Thomas, how hard he runs. He's out. So then you're going to be splitting Mark Ingram, kind of a tough back, not great, pretty solid. And Kyrie Robinson, who's got a lot of vision for a free agent, they'll probably split time. And then you got Travaris Cadet, a real good receiver on third down. Offensive line. Well, their center's out. Jonathan Goodwin, a veteran guy, wrecked his leg against Detroit. So you got Tim Lolito, a second-year guy, played about 160 snaps last year behind De La Puente, who was dumped after the season. Lolito, he's got good size, 6'3 and a half, 320. He's not the worst center. I don't think it's a big drop-off. Best guy is probably Teron Armstead. He's the left tackle. He's probably their best athlete. And, you know, he's really come on. He's not there yet, but he's a pretty good player for a third-round pick from where? Pine Bluff?
Arkansas Pine Bluff. Ran that great 40 at the combine.
4.78 or something.
Right. Yeah.
The right tackle is Zach Streif, you know. I compare him a lot to Phil Loadhole of the Vikings. Better balance than Loadhole. I kind of like Zach Streif. You know, he's been there a long time, starting for about 4 years now, on the club for 9. He's not bad. I mean, he's a lot bigger than Mark Tauscher. Tauscher's more athletic. But Streif's not bad. He holds his own. Yeah, he finds a way to do it. The guards, you know, Ben Grubbs on the left side and Jahri Evans on the right. They've been to Pro Bowls. Evans has made All-Pro a bunch of times. They've slipped. That's part of Breeze's problem. The pocket's not as firm. You can see it. I mean, Detroit got after these guys. Mm. Detroit's D-line was incredible again Sunday. Fairley and, Sue and Mosley. Mosley made some plays,
Ziggy
too.
Ansa.
They are really a good front, and they got all over the Saints.
If Detroit wins the NFC North, probably because of their defensive line. They might have the best D-line in the league.
They could, yeah. And they have a great linebacker in Levy, you know, from Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
So, Grubbs and Evans are okay. I mean, they anchor up pretty good. I mean, they're better than okay. They're both among the top 15 or 20 guards out of 64 starters. But I just don't think they're elite anymore. So it's a solid line. I think Lolito will be okay. All right, so Breeze, 35 years old, 6 foot on the nose. Tyler, what are your impressions of Breeze after all these years?
Well, if there's one quarterback that could really go drive for drive with Aaron Rodgers, and if it becomes that kind of a game, it would be Drew Breeze, right? I mean, he's done it before. He's inside the dome. I think you wrote about it in your scouting report, but his numbers at home compared to on the road, it's unbelievable how big of a discrepancy it really is. I mean, he's almost flawless sometimes at home. I mean, he is 35, but gosh, I don't know. It still looks to me like he could play at this level another 2-3 seasons. I don't know if any problems they're having offensively are really him or maybe Colston getting a little older, Graham being injured. Cooks was an interesting pick. I mean, that draft pick was really raved about up and down, and you know, he had that great combine. You just figured, boy, you put him in that Saints offense, holy cow. But then you'll get to the defense here shortly. They totally whiffed at cornerback. To think that Champ Bailey had any game left, they could have drafted a really good cornerback at that spot. The drop-off from the first round to the second round is substantial. Maybe a pick that they regret in a game like this.
I mean, there's all those receivers you get in the second round, such as Devontae Adams, Landry at Miami. So they took this little guy. Little guys, you know. Little fast receivers. I don't know. And you talk about building for their home stadium. That's what they're trying to do with this pick. Mm-hmm. He hasn't done it yet. Now, he could break out at any time, you know. They run the ball pretty well, Tyler. And I don't know if Peyton will be patient with it, but they could hurt the Packers with this run. They are pretty good backs. You saw it in the playoffs. Kyrie Robinson last year was good. Ingram pushes the pile. I mean, he's a pretty good player. They have fullbacks. Eric Lorig, if he's active, he's just back from injury. I mean, he's a big blocker. They can control the pace of this game with their run game. So that's the O.
And on the flip side, we talked about Rob Ryan and blitzing. If he does make this a blitz game, that's kind of what Rodgers likes. But also, looking back at that 0-9 game against the Browns and what Rob Ryan was doing there, the Packers ran the ball on 11 of their first 12 plays of the game. They didn't have Chad Clifton, and they didn't have Mark Tauscher that game. Their starting tackles were a rookie, T.J. Lang, at left tackle, Alan Barber at right tackle. So Rodgers posted that incredible passer rating against Rob Ryan without his two starting tackles.
Did you look all that up?
NFL game rewinds.
Really?
Yeah, just watch the game again. Yeah.
I can't remember any of that stuff. Okay. All right, let's go to Ryan's D. Second in the league last year in his first season as coordinator. He had a great season. Was he doing it with Mears? Maybe so. Maybe so. All right, the front. Cameron Jordan. You know, it's really a four-man front. They're not a 3-4 team. So let's just consider these guys. All right, so the ends, they flip-flop sides. You got Cameron Jordan, one of the better DEs around, 285. He can win with power. He can win with edge stuff. Plays hard. Really a top guy. On the other side, you got Junior Gallette. Came out of Division II Stillman 4 years, 5 years ago. He brings it hard. You've seen Gallette, and he's had, I don't know, 15 sacks last year in 18 games, I think it was. He gets off the ball hard. He's kind of short. He's only about 258. He's a good pass rusher, and he's got the advantage of crowd noise here. He's a threat. Yeah. He chases hard like a la Clay Matthews. Those are two good players. Akeem Hicks came out of Canada. Third-round pick in 2012, he's a gamble, and he's paid off. You know, he's 325, almost 6'5". He's a massive human being. He's more than just a traffic cop guy. I mean, this guy, he can rush the passer. He's stout. He's a good player.
They're lucky they nailed that pick, too. I think that was the draft out of Bounty Gate when they had all those picks taken away. They didn't pick until the third round. And so they take this gamble in the third round. I remember talking to him before the draft up in Canada. Was it Regina, Canada?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Saskatchewan? Right. Okay. Yeah, once in a while a CFL guy can pay off. Cameron Wake, you never know.
Not CFL, Canadian College.
Canadian College, that's right. Okay, I'm sorry.
I think he started at LSU.
You're right.
Got thrown out.
You're right. He didn't play in the CFL. It was a college in Canada.
Yeah, which is
even more of a gamble.
Correct.
Unbelievable.
He had played at LSU briefly, I believe, got thrown out. So, all right, that's work. The nose tackle is kind of Broderick Bunkley. He's had a concussion in this Detroit game, but he practiced limited here. I assume he plays. If not, you got the enormous John Jenkins from Georgia. He's okay. All right, so that's their front. Tyron Walker's not a bad inside rusher. All right, linebackers. Curtis Lofton in the middle plays every snap. The Lions had a play the other day on third and one. Reggie Bush ran off left tackle. I think the Lions had seven or eight guys blocking. Everybody was blocked. They couldn't get anybody on Curtis Lofton. They met over at left tackle. Reggie Bush was blown back, never even got close to the sticks. I mean, there was no need to even measure. It was just a drilling hit. Curtis Lofton does not have great speed, but, boy, he's a nasty, fiery guy. Good player. David Hawthorne, the former Seahawk, also plays almost every snap. He's next to Lofton. He's not bad either. He's a pretty good player. When they got to stop the run, they bring in the ex-49er, Paris Harrelson. Tough guy. He's fine. All right, the secondary. It's the same every week, Tyler. The secondaries are the problem for all these teams.
Mm-hmm.
Hasn't it been like this all season? All right, you got Keenan Lewis. He's got some injury problems. Keenan Lewis had a great year last year coming over from Pittsburgh as a UFA. He's big. He's like 6'1", pretty good speed, not real physical. Shaky ball skills, although he had a tremendous hands interception against the Lions the other day. Okay, he's their best secondary guy. You got Corey White at the other corner. Physical as all get out against the run. He will force and he will strike your butt. He's really a physical guy.
What does that mean?
He'll get after you and he'll tackle you hard with form up tackle.
Strike your butt.
He'll get after Eddie Lacy.
Okay.
He may bounce off, but he'll hit him with everything he's worth. Watch this guy. He's an interesting player.
That sounds scary.
But he can't cover.
Can't cover.
Not really. He's better than Godfrey or people like that from last week, but it's a struggle for him. He's a 4'6 guy. Patrick Robinson has been a bust as a number one. He should be back this week. He's probably the third corner, but he hasn't played well. Your fourth is Brian Dixon, a guy, undrafted rookie who can run. Your fifth is Stanley John Baptiste from Nebraska, a second-round pick who can hardly get on the field. He's so raw.
That was kind of a Richard Sherman pick, wasn't it? I mean, after that Super Bowl, every team is looking for the long, aggressive type at cornerback. That Pierre Desir, I think, comes to mind out of Lindenwood D2. I mean, he was drafted. And then a guy like Baptiste, wasn't he a former receiver at Nebraska?
I think so.
And so they move him to corner. You know, it's a copycat league. Every team's going to chase the next Richard Sherman. Maybe that's what they tried to do there. You haven't really seen that much.
You mentioned Champ Bailey. That was their big signing, huh? They were going to plug Champ in there. Are you kidding me? They did watch the Super Bowl tape. They knew he had a Liz Frank injury. He's 35.
But it's Champ, Bob. It's Champ.
Okay.
If there's any good move to make in the NFL, you judge based on what a guy did 2-3 years prior to you signing that player.
You know, I like to think that these scouting departments are, you know, really sophisticated now and are immune to the horrible mistake, and then something like this happens. You just wonder. It's a terrible decision.
If our listeners could just see the look on your face right now.
Old guys at cornerback, huh?
How's Charles Woodson working out for the Raiders? Well, he's a safety, I guess.
He ought to quit, too. All right, at safety, they lost Jairus Byrd. Now, he's from Buffalo. He wasn't playing that good, Ty. He was their free safety. He was going to tie Rob's blitz stuff all together. Do you like Byrd? You've paid attention to him over the years. I haven't.
Yeah, you know, he was a playmaker. I mean, he was a big hitter. He was around the ball a lot. But it just seems like the classic case of a free agent just getting paid way too much money for, you know, the Saints could have drafted somebody. They could have found somebody else and just paid this guy a ton of money for, I don't know. Great. I know a lot of the fans here kept bringing up Jairus Byrd, but for what it costs and the dividends you're going to get on that return, it just makes a lot more sense to try to nail a draft pick at that spot.
He was once a Wisconsin prep.
Right. His dad was Gil Byrd in Green Bay.
Where'd he play at, Tyler?
Oh, man.
That freshman year.
Are we talking Brown County?
Fox Valley Classic Conference. Brown County.
I have no idea.
The Pulaski Red Raiders.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pulaski.
Varsity as a freshman. All right, Tyler. Then we got, Kenny Vaccaro, first-round pick in 2013. Wrecked his foot or his ankle last December and had surgery. Doesn't seem to be the same player. Not running that great. Horrible angle on this Golden Tate touchdown that enabled the Lions to shockingly beat the Saints Sunday. Terrible angle. Showed no speed. It was bad. Raphael Bush has replaced Byrd. Good player. Free agent. Good player. He's only 5'10". That's a problem, but boy, the guy's got a lot of ability. But they don't have the calming presence of Byrd. Marcus Ball plays a lot as the third safety, so that's the D. Special teams, Thomas Morstad is an outstanding punter and kickoff guy. Shane Graham has been with 14 teams, three of them twice.
He's a regular Torrey Gurley, isn't he?
Pretty close.
Yeah.
Torrey's catching him.
He is.
Graham is good, 85.7. He once flubbed about a 24-yard kick for the Carolina Panthers his first season at Lambeau Field, like 0-3 or 4.
Wow.
Yeah. He blew that kick, and it cost the Panthers the game, if I remember.
So was that the game where Bubba Franks threw a touchdown?
Don't know.
It was a close game, but he missed a 24-yarder. Wow.
The special teams coach was Scott O'Brien. He was fit to be tied about that forever and ever. He still would remember that. The long snapper's fine. The return game is a mess. That's your Saints. That's the Saints. What do you think of them, Tyler?
Did
you pick them to win the Super Bowl or go to the Super Bowl?
I did.
Did you?
I had Saints-Colts. Yep. I got to own up to it. Hey, they're not out of it yet.
No, they're not.
They're not out of it. I just feel like at home, at the Superdome, Drew Brees, I know Jimmy Graham's working back from his injury. Another week will probably help him. Colston played a little better. Stills is coming out a little bit. I think they'll be able to move the ball and put up points. And I think I picked the Saints in this one.
Yeah.
You look ahead to Green Bay's schedule. This is the kind of game where maybe they trip up. What do you think?
I'm not picking. I never am picking.
Give us a pick. Picking for the game, pod, for picking, the listeners. Give them a pick, Bob.
I've been in a pool against my son.
Okay.
A friend and his wife, a four-man pool since 95. Just picked the game straight up. I've moved up from last place. Now I'm tied for third with with Debbie.
I always like it when we get we get close to kickoff in a press box, and there's a few beads of sweat going down your forehead, trying to figure out those last couple of picks
before the noon kickoff. I can make my change.
You can look at the inactives.
I've done that 3 times in the last 2-3 weeks, and I'm 0-3 in those games.
See, you overthink it. You overanalyze. You can't overanalyze. No, you don't play fantasy football.
No.
You don't?
No.
I think you should give it a shot.
I changed from Tennessee to Jacksonville 2 weeks ago, and it's still driving me nuts. We were in that press box in Miami that day.
That's right. We had a good Charlie Whitehurst versus Blake Bortles conversation up there, didn't we?
Charlie McGinn is 7 games ahead of me.
Oh, 7 games?
Yeah.
Taking it to his old man.
Yes, he is.
All right. Well, do we have to, before we get to questions, anything else we want to touch upon?
Nothing. Let's go to these queries.
All right. A lot of them in there. Holy cow. We got about... Okay. This one comes from... All right, I think Sean Upton's messing with us because I got a couple of these in the chat. Why isn't John Kuhn getting more touches, and is it his fault? Is it his fault the Packers didn't draft J.J. Watt? First question I got in the chat after the Panthers game is, why isn't John Kuhn getting more touches? And then a fan said, why didn't they draft J.J. Watt? It's just absurd. Okay, let's get
to it. He's a productive running back, John is so far of late.
He is. When you're putting up 36, 37 points a game, you start featuring your fullback in the ground game, Bob.
I think we should.
Okay. All right. You heard it here.
All right. Let me get into one of these, Tyler, for you. All right, Tyler. If the Packers, from Mr. John Decker, John writes, if the Packers have to choose between keeping Tremont or House, which one do they keep?
I don't know if it's an either-or decision for Green Bay. At this rate, Devon House is going to earn himself a contract somewhere after the season. Tremont Williams is on the wrong side of 30, but he's still at his peak. I mean, he can play outside. They're using him a lot inside. This is a team that always tries to think 2-3 moves ahead. Boy, that's a tough call. I really don't know. I think you just have to let it play out and see if House continues to ascend like he is.
Somebody probably will get hurt, Tyler, and solve the mystery.
These things tend to work themselves out.
Yep.
Okay. Todd Fabos, at the Rich and Fabos. Yes.
Todd is a former Packer employee and a darn good one.
Is that right?
Yes, he worked on that PR staff, and he did a great job. All right, wow. Todd.
Wow, okay. I had no idea.
You didn't know Todd. That's
I didn't know. I didn't know Todd.
Yep.
All right.
Great guy.
Thanks for chiming in, Todd. All right, he asks,
what's he writing?
Will they ever incorporate DeJuan Harris into the offense? Good question. What do you think?
Not right now. Not if those two stay healthy. I don't see it. He hasn't played that good.
Well, we didn't really talk about the running game earlier in the podcast, but that's probably what they're looking for with the Saw in the Carolina game, right? I mean, Eddie Lacy, they said his broken tackles were in the teens. James Starks, he's got that ability to gain the corner. They combined for 100-plus total yards, and they didn't even run that much. So
yeah,
probably what they want out of their run game.
Yep.
We don't know on Starks' ankle. As of now, they sound optimistic, but unless he misses the game, probably not going to see DeJuan Harris anytime soon. Slappy White, what is Bob more proud of? His distinguished and revered writing career, a Hall of Fame career, or his luxurious head of hair? I kind of want to know the answer to this as a balding 27-year-old.
I'm just glad I have some hair.
Yeah, you bastard. Come on. Quit hogging the hair for all of us. What's your secret? What's the secret?
Luck.
Luck?
I guess.
At what point, maybe the listeners can help me out with this one, at what point do you just say no moss and bick it and just shave it, shave the head?
I don't know.
Am I getting to that point? Give it a look.
No.
No? Not yet?
I think you need to try some of these products, Tyler. Are there these products you hear about on TV, right?
Nothing works, you know? We can put a man on the moon, which, by the way, that expression, you know, putting a man on the moon, that just kind of made things worse for everybody. Because whenever something isn't done, you can just say, well, we put a man on the moon, but we didn't do this, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know if that was actually good. All right.
One more, Ty.
All right, let's just see if we have any more in here. Who are the Packers keeping? Mike Daniels or Randall Cobb? Both or none? Do you really want to talk about guys that are up for extensions yet, or is it too early?
A little early.
It's a little early.
You're trying to win games here, Tyler.
You're trying to stack some damn successes. That's all you're trying to do. Okay, let's listen to a little Steve-O. What do you think?
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once, a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. SpringHill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.